Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on? You're listening to Money Talk. I'm the Prosperity Professor. I got Brain Anthony Clark here. We got some new going on. But let's drop this line and let's get it started.
And good morning, everybody. We're coming on the air with breaking news. This is the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow will drop and drop quickly, and we're already seeing.
At the moment, Stephanie, it looks like stocks are surging.
Well, and good evening. Today's stock story is investing. Do you know what it is and how to do it? Well, there's a team out here calling themselves Money Talk with Professor, and all heroes don't wear capes.
This is The Prosperity.
This is Brandon Anthony.
You're listening to Money Talk.
And you are now listening to Money Talk.
If I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me? Bad times are coming and I reap what I done sowed.
What's up, what's up, what's up, Blog Talk and NS Father Radio. I am your host, Ryan Stone, the Prosperity Professor. And I'm joined with Brandon Anthony Clark, All Heroes Don't Wear Capes. We're going live today as well on all of our streaming platforms. This is an incredible age, Brandon. Man, I cannot believe that we have this available, man. This is pretty cool.
I know, man. Check this out, man. Most of you don't know me. My name is Brandon Clark. For the last month or so, sorry, no one.
Yeah, Brandon, it looks like I need you maybe just to call back onto the radio.
I think I'm in there.
I know. Give me one sec. I'll try this one more time.
How about now? We good?
There we go. We're all set. You're up here on Blog Talk, and we're over there too.
Sounds good. All right, so we really doing this right now. We're literally on two platforms going live simultaneously at the same time. Thank you, NSL Fatherhood Radio. It's our nonprofit that we partner with. They're located out of Maine. I'm in Sacramento, and I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Ryan, do you have any audio going on in the background? I hear a little bit of an echo.
Is that better?
That's better, 100% better. And my man Ryan, the Prosperity Professor, is down in sunny San Diego. How you like it out there in San Diego, man?
Honestly, man, it's been dumping on us the past couple of days.
What do you
but I can't complain.
What do you like about San Diego?
You know what? This is going to hurt a lot of people's feelings. But the Mexican food is the best, bar none. Next to Mexico itself.
Oh yeah.
NorCal burritos are a sad excuse for a burrito when you come down to San Diego. And on top of that, you can walk out the door here with a burrito for about 2/3 of the price of what it will cost you up there. So that's just a helpful little bit. But, man, that's some good Mexican food is always my comfort.
Absolutely, man. I love Mexican food, too. You know, it's funny. I always tell this story because, you know, I'm from South Carolina, right? I always tell the story. I grew up there. Then I moved to California right after I graduated high school because I wanted to play football. So that's why I ended up in, California. But my whole life, I had never had Mexican food until I moved to California. So my Mexican food experience my whole life before moving to California was Taco Bell. You feel me?
Oh,
man. That was Mexican food for me. And the first real Mexican food that I'm going to call, which ain't even real Mexican food, was Chipotle. So my burrito was a Chipotle burrito, which was – if you've been to Chipotle and you're a Chipotle fan, you know Chipotle got some – bomb burritos, bomb food just in general. You know what I'm saying? So
false.
False. That's just kind of crazy. Like, just kind of how you can grow up in one area and live life a certain way, and then you go to a whole different area, and you know, things just are 100% different. And so that kind of leads us into our topic of discussion, right? And our topic of discussion tonight is basically talking about creating wealth. Creating wealth, you know, not taking wealth, but actually creating wealth. And how is wealth created? You know, once we create wealth, how do we keep that wealth? Well, there are certain strategies and things that we can use in order to, number one, create wealth, and number two, keep wealth. And unfortunately, a lot of that information is limited, is like what I like to say. I always give this example of if we take 100 people, let's say we all start even at the age of 20, and let's say we fast forward 45 years later through the age of 65, well, just based on the numbers, out of those 100 people, only one person will ever become rich. Four people will become financially independent. Five will still be working by that age, and then the rest of everybody else will be broke. And so you kind of got to ask yourself this question, well, why do only, you know, 5% of, you know, people that live in the richest country ever to exist on the face of the earth, why do only five people become successful, at least financially, whereas the other 95% fail, right? And so that's why I like to say information is limited. You got to think of everything almost like a pyramid. You ever heard of that, like a pyramid scheme, right? Pyramid schemes. Well, the thing about pyramids is that everything is a pyramid, even information. The higher you go up, the more limited the information is. You see what I'm saying? So if unless you're in the 1% or 5% of wealth, then you're probably going to be in the 95%. And the 95% of people do the things that they hear everybody else do. So I always like to say they do this thing called follow the follower, meaning a lot of people are just following other people who are also following other people who are also following other people. And they're not necessarily getting great, credible information because, like I said, information is limited. You feel me? And so that's a pyramid scheme. How do I know it's a pyramid scheme? Well, because I was trained to do certain things a certain way for pretty much my whole life. And it wasn't until 4 years ago where I was introduced to actually learning how to create wealth, learning how to pass down wealth, learning how to make more money, learn multiple streams of income, learning how to leverage credit, learning how to invest in real estate with absolutely none of your own money. And so what was different? Information. I got some information that changed my life. You see what I'm saying?
That's right.
So what we want to do is kind of give you just a sneak peek and just open your eyes so you can open your mind so you can get more and more information. That way you can get what everybody else wants. And what does everybody else want, Ryan? Prosperity.
Freedom.
Man,
freedom.
Man.
Security.
So,
right.
So with that being said, man, you had posted an interesting post about French fries yesterday.
Man,
why don't you tell us a little bit about
that
post,
I guess,
man? You could even
we must be hungry.
You
want to
share your screen?
We must be hungry because you know we're coming back. We're coming back to the same places. I guess I'm talking about burritos, or I don't know, French fries too. That's where the next metaphor was. And just to connect with what you were saying, right? Too many people are kind of following the follower, particularly around financial planning, right?
Yeah.
What is 99% of the population doing right now in order to plan for the future or retirement? What's
90%
of
people right now
doing?
What are they doing? Well, the smart ones are at least learning a little bit more about stocks and different investments, but the majority of people save most of their money in tax-deferred accounts and qualified plans, otherwise known as 401ks, right?
And what do you
right
we say when you're a qualified plan, right? I agree, man, because that's what my job
when I hear the word qualified
they're giving
plan,
me a match.
Yeah, they're giving me a match, man. And I'm so glad that today we're actually able to be on Zoom and stream Zoom, so now we can actually share our screen so you just know we're not really making stuff up. You know, we can pull some data right off the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation, the FDIC's website. We could actually do that. You know what I'm saying? We could also you can see my board up here. Because, you know, if you've seen my live streams before, if you watch me on Instagram and TikTok, you know how I get down on the board. And it's not a game. It's not a game. We go hard. You feel me? And so I kind of just lost my train of thought because, you know, I'm multitasking. Like I said, it's our first time trying to juggle all of these different platforms all at one time. But
yeah, I wish I could help you out. I can't see the Instagram anymore. So I'll get up on Lulu so I can help with the comments next time. Mm-hmm. But what I was basically saying is everybody's doing this qualified plan. Everyone's following the follower. What I'm trying to do is, and this is something that I've kind of always been, I've always been a little bit, I like people. I like to talk to people, but I've always been kind of a little bit of a loner. And even like in most social situations, I often find myself like kind of in a third person perspective about the whole thing. And if you take that same glance with the financial system right now, or just traditional financial planning, like you said, saving a qualified plan, put all your money into your house so that you own your house debt-free, you know, that kind of means, well, I'm looking from a 4D perspective in time, and I'm looking at all the people that followed that so-called plan, and let's take a look at where they're at right now. Did it work for them? In 2 years, more people will head to retirement in the United States than ever before. They're called the baby boomers. 80 million people are about to hit retirement age in the next 2 to 3 years. And yet, if you look at the stats right now, 60% of more baby boomers are unable to retire effectively, independently, or completely. 60%, almost 2 out of 3, who followed this method of means, saving with my employer, deferring my taxes, hoping for Social Security, paying off my house, still working.
Deal.
So something needs to change here, right? We can't keep following the same pathway over and over again and expect something different.
Yeah.
Right? So my post the other day, it kind of went back to French fries. And, I mean, type in the comments if anybody – I mean, maybe it's just my fat ass that does this, but anybody, I mean, if you're saying you don't, you're a liar. Everybody's pulled away from the drive-thru and tried to grab some French fries out of the bag on their way out, right? And while you're doing that, you're doing a million different things. You're putting your phone away. You're putting your wallet and your card back away. You're collecting your change. You're putting the straw in the cup so it doesn't fall away. And you try and pull out a couple French fries from the bag as you pull out of the parking lot from whatever, insert your favorite fast food spot. And what always happens is you end up dropping a fry down the crack in the center of your car, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Throw a yes in the comments if you've ever dropped some kind of stuff down the cracks of your car. And sometimes you might pick it up. Maybe you pick it up and clean your car. Maybe you don't. I don't know. I'll leave that to you. Doesn't matter how good you clean your car. There's always one French fry there. Years later, you're like, what the heck? How'd that be there?
And it still looks good as new, right? It still looks like a French fry, like you still eat it. It's probably been sitting there for like 6 years or whatever. But
well, this isn't,
like
this isn't a food in conversation. My point is that same issue, you guys, happens in everybody's financial plan. We're trying to do a million different things. We got to pick up the kids. We have different practices with this. We have different payments and bills, and we made some money. Then we spent some money, a little extra here, a little extra food there. Did you know that a random purchase of $27 a day, a random little oopsies, a random little I need a snack, a random purchase of $27 a day, 27 fries lost a day is $10,000 a year. You can do the math on that. It's right around $10,000 a year. And so this is what I want to talk about is, we can build wealth, but what's one of the easiest ways to build wealth? Is to cut down on the amount of fries that we're losing out of the bag. And we're losing it all the time. We're losing it to excessive interest payments, to debt. We're losing it by not financing things correctly. We're losing it by not taking advantage of certain tax benefits that are available to us. We just don't know about it. That gets back to your pyramid of knowledge, right? And so I'm kind of blessed that we get this opportunity, that this knowledge was passed to us. And it's dramatically changed my life in the past 3 or 4 years that I've been using it. And it's just a blessing to be able to continue to pass it on. to now more and more and more people as our technology kind of grows.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And so why don't we I want to touch on that just a little bit, man, because something just kind of popped in my head when you mentioned the French fries, and you said that just $27 a day basically equates to 10 grand a year. You know, it's at 27. So it's all about keeping money, keeping wealth, preserving wealth. And one of the biggest, I'm going to call them thieves. I'm not calling them thieves, but what they do is technically theft, legal theft, is taxes. Taxes.
That's right.
I'm going to say it again, taxes. Now, let's check this out, man. Income tax is relatively new in the United States of America. You know, they didn't come out with an income tax until the early 1900s. Guess what this country was founded on in 1776? What did they say?
Not paying your taxes.
What was the Boston Tea Party? What was he say?
No taxation without representation.
Yeah,
right.
So America, you know, was born in 1776, and they revolted from England or Great Britain or whoever it is. I don't know. You know, y'all know who I'm talking about, because they didn't want to pay taxes, right?
But you know, I'm not going to let you get away with it. I was a history teacher, man. You're spot on.
Teacher, who was it? Was it England, London, Great Britain, the Redcoats?
Great Britain.
Uh-huh. And so Great Britain was taxing the shit out of the United States. And they said, we ain't dealing with this no more. We going to have a revolution. And we're going to part ways with Great Britain, because they didn't want to pay taxes. But now here we find ourselves 250 years later, and now we've been paying taxes for the last 100 years. And so you got to ask yourself why, right? And so there's really only three types of ways that we can all pay taxes, right? And so the thing, I'm going to go back to the 5% versus the 95%. 95% of people.
I was
going to
do that.
Money.
I was going to do that. Same thing.
You are.
Let me just pause right there, because before you get into the actual solution, this is one more conceptual piece on that. This is a little historical background, and this is not some national treasure tinfoil hat stuff. If you think for a moment that the forefathers rebuilt this country and rewrote the constitutional laws, if you think for one moment that they did not write in loopholes for people in the know to get out of future taxation, then you're obviously going to be stuck in that 99% for longer than you can control. People in the know how to get out of these out of taxes, right?
Yeah.
How much did Jeff Bezos pay? How much did Donald Trump pay in that whole scandal? Well, they got away with it because they know how to do it. They know how to leverage those business tax advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And individuals can do it too if they know how. So, Brandon, I had to give you that little segue, right? So now, what are the three ways that we can get taxed in this country?
All right, so let's all take a look at this real quick. So there's only three ways we can pay taxes. First way is called taxable. All right, and so those of you joining us on TikTok, on Instagram right now, why don't you guys give me some examples of just places where people put money? You don't even necessarily have to give me what type of an account, but like what, stocks? You know, just give me some examples, and I'm going to list them up here, right here on the board where everybody can see. That way we can know where things belong. And if you're listening to us on NSF, so there's taxable, tax-deferred, and tax-free accounts. So if you're listening to us on NSF Radio, feel free to join us on Instagram or on TikTok. On TikTok, it'll be at Brandon Anthony Clark. On Instagram, it will be at All Heroes Don't Wear Capes. We have 529 plans. 529 plans are – that's a gray area. It's a gray area. It's there's some strings attached, but I will put 529.
529 is tax-deferred. It's tax deferred,
it is, but I'm going to put it – okay, we'll put it there. Because it depends on how we're using it.
Yeah, Most people, the thing with 529s are – this is great.
Yeah.
This is a great – I love that you have comments. Here's the thing with 529s, and I saw this happen as a teacher, as an educator. 529s sound great, but it's the piece that goes with the 99% for people saving in them.
most families end up not using the money for school or for things that get them the tax advantages for it, and so then it becomes tax-deferred. In all purposes and in life, the 529 ends up being tax-deferred. I've watched it happen over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. And so for those of you who have tax-deferred or 529 plans, I get the logic behind it because it's actually a really great account. But there are restrictions that go with 529 plans, and we'll talk about those maybe not tonight, but another night, right? Because you could actually be penalized for having a 529 because that 529B plan counts as an asset. So if your child is applying for financial aid, for grants, things like that, you have to list the assets of the 529 plan on there. So you literally could get penalized or not get as much free money or grant money because you have a 529. You see what I'm saying?
For doing the right thing.
You know what I'm saying? And so
it's horrible.
I got to think about that because I think that's I see that plan come up a lot. Grandparents want to open up 529 plans for their kids. Us as parents, we want to open up our kids because we want them to. Because
totally
we don't want them to go into debt like where most of us are in debt, in student loan debt. You see what I'm saying? Where we got some other places. We got the IRA. We got 529. We got behind the drywall. So I'm going to put couch, mattress, and drywall. Those are all the same thing.
There's money in the
and
banana
people are probably
stand.
Looking at it like, people are probably looking at like taxes. Or how is that taxable if it's in the couch? Oh, man. You better be glad you're watching this. Because
there's always money in the
banana
stand.
That's
shout out,
cash
Parks
is the worst kind of tax. Cash
or
is the worst
rest
kind
of development.
Tax. So we got a whole life. We got IRAs, Roth IRAs. See, a lot of people have been following me, so they know what time it is. Whole life. I'm going to just put CVLI because that's life insurance. Cash value life insurance is different. All life insurance is not created equally. All right. The gray area, mutual funds. There we go, mutual. Okay, what else we got? Well, you get. How about, Ryan, you give me some. Mutual funds.
I like the drywall. I think people put money in assets. People put money in assets.
Real estate.
Land. Gold. Bonds.
Crypto. Gold. Silver. Right? So.
And there's other commodities, too. But then you got to sell those, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people. My cousin loves cards, man. Baseball cards.
Mm-hmm.
Big baseball cards. Shoes.
Yeah.
Commodities.
Yeah, absolutely. Baseball cards, shoes, collectibles, things like that. Great, right? And so I see a lot of places up here. Now, we know this from personal experience because you and I, we've done thousands of appointments over the last few years. We sit down with a couple that's got a nice portfolio, is well put together. Looks great. You know, they got their stocks, they got their mutual funds, they got their 401k. They got maybe a few rental properties, and you know they're doing great, right? Because they're actually doing a lot better than most people. But there's only one problem that we see. They have money in taxable, tax-deferred accounts, and they have no money in tax-free accounts, right? And that goes back to what we originally were talking about with the French fries. We drop in a couple French fries a day. Doesn't really seem like much, but
that's right.
Imagine paying 15% every year on your growth, on your gains in taxable accounts, 15%. So basically, if you made $1,000 in gains, you're paying $150 a year. If you made $100,000 in gains, you're paying how much? $15,000 a year. Let's not even get started on tax deferred because that's based on our income. Right? So the more money we make, the more we pay in what? Taxes. Exactly.
Right.
But let's say we be conservative and most people are at 25% federal.
But what about that old adage, man? What about that old adage? This is what my dad's financial advisor told him, and this is probably what most of our followers' financial advisors, they have one, told them. When you retire, you'll be in a lower tax bracket, so the taxes will be less.
Well, that sounds great, doesn't it? Now, it would make sense, but let me ask everybody this question. do you plan to make less money as you grow older, or do you want to make more money? Or do you want to make the same amount of money? So let me rephrase that question. Let's say you make $50,000 a year. Do you see yourself making $50,000 a year for the rest of your life? Or do you see yourself making more money over time? Most people, I've never gotten somebody to say they wanted to make less money 20 years from now than they do now. Most people always want to make more money as they get older, right? So just that's one myth that I would say as far as, oh, you'll be in a lower tax bracket. Well, how are you going to be in a lower tax bracket if you make more money as you get older? That's number
that's
one.
Right. There's a couple pieces to that too, right? So the first one is,
yeah,
is that, right? Do you think you're going to make more money in the future? Number two is, on the day that you stop working, would you like your income to be the same or less, right? The same,
yep,
more or less. When you go into your golden years or when you stop working, would you like your income, your next check, your retirement check, whatever you want to call it, to be more, the,
yeah,
same or less than the checks you've been used to? Well, then right there, a lot of people say, well, my house is paid off. I don't need more money. Okay. That's fine. Is that the case? Then we get into actual baby boomers who are trying to live on less. What does their picture look like? 67% of the bankruptcies, Brandon, in this country are caused by medical debt. What do you do,
yeah,
when you're, you know, ready to, you know, in those years and all you have is you're living on less and now you have a medical emergency?
Yeah.
Which is typically when it happens, right? When you're older.
Yeah, yeah, we mostly get sicker as we get older. And I tell this story all the time, man. I spent a lot of time in nursing homes growing up. My grandmother actually worked at a nursing home. My grandmother actually raised me. And so I used to go to work with her sometimes. And I spent a lot of time in nursing homes around old people, you know. Love old people. But I can say for sure, I definitely don't want to be in a nursing home when I get older. Ever. You know what I mean? And so one of the things that happens with people, they don't have like a plan that's set in place. The very first thing that the government makes you do, they make you, before they will pay for your long-term care, they make you sell all your assets first before they step in and assist you with like assisted living and stuff like that. And I don't think a lot of people really know that. So that means that 401k money, they will actually force you to liquidate the majority of that account, right, to pay for long-term care types of events and things like that. And so it's really like a sad picture to see. It's something that I definitely don't want for myself, and I don't think anybody would want that for themselves as well. Like, I know it's something that, you know, most of us are young. We're in our 30s. We're not thinking about getting old. But, shoot, I see it all the time. I think about it all the time.
Time goes by quick. Brandon,
let's
do this. I think it's a perfect place to pause. When we come back, let's talk about how to never step off the gas. Let's talk about how to never drop any fries. Let's talk about how to get ahead of these problems that we see on the horizon that many people are dealing with today. But right now, we got to pay the bills. So I'm just going to mute myself on here, and we'll just pay these ads real quick on Blog Talk. You're listening to Money Talk Radio.
All right, all right.
This is The Prosperity Professor, and I'm joined with Brandon Anthony Clark. All here is Don't Wear Capes. We are live on both of those Instagrams. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Yes, yes.
You're listening to Money Talk.
You are now listening to Money Talk Live
on NSL Radio every Tuesday and Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tune in.
Am I good now?
We're back. Thank you, Money Talk.
Good morning.
Good evening.
Good
night. Now I got a weird echo.
All right, yep. There we go. I'm good. I'll try to figure it out, man. Like I said, look, y'all bear with us, man. We going live on like three different platforms. And we on the radio live right now on NSL Fatherhood Radio. Y'all come check us out. It's our nonprofit that we partner with. They're out in Maine. Do a lot of work in the community, especially for fathers, you know, building up the community and so forth and so forth. And we are definitely sharing with you some classified information. I like to call it classified information. G14 classified for my Rush Hour fans. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies.
So,
but yeah, Ryan,
I was going to ask you this, man. Earlier today, you told me this story, and I think this is probably the best metaphor I've heard for what it is that we do, right? And so on the one hand, anybody that we sit down with, ultimately our goal is to make sure that at the end of the day, they have more control over more dollars than what would have happened if they didn't sit down with us. We want to maximize your net worth. We want to make sure that you have the most dollars back in your pocket at the end of the day. And whether that comes from, number one, not losing any fries, whether it's to taxes, inevitable medical bills, or market volatility. And that's kind of another piece too, right? Because if you look at that whiteboard, Brandon, go ahead and if you have like another color, or if you have another, maybe just put a star next to every single thing that could be affected by market volatility.
A star that could be against everything that could be affected by market volatility. And so
market
for those of you listening,
like it did,
got it.
Let's say the market crashes 30%, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like it did, it did in March.
This account.
Who's getting hit?
This account. This. Not so much that. Not so much. This
is a good touch.
Okay, but we're definitely going to go here, even this, and this Roth IRA. And
absolutely.
So what that basically
means. Hold on, stand to the
right
side. Let me just look what percentage on that whiteboard from what everybody said would be affected if the market dipped.
Right, so what percentage
would you say most?
Of those accounts?
That's a lot. I would say at least 80% of the things that all of our viewers suggested would be affected by market volatility.
And so what market volatility
is go ahead.
The market going up and down. And so I think there's a lot of misconception out there, and I hear this all the time. Gurus say, hey, man, you're young. You got enough time to make it back. All I know is tomorrow's not promised, number one. Number two is if you lose $20, yes, you can make $20 back, but you still lost $20. You see what I'm saying? It literally makes absolutely no sense, the stuff that they try to tell us. We got time, you can make it back, or you lost money in the market, so put more money in it because now it's cheaper by the dip. What? That's crazy. It's crazy. It don't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Brandon, tell me that story again. Tell me that story about the driver.
All right, so look, man, y'all check this out. If you could understand what I'm about to tell you, then you automatically going to set yourself apart from the 95%, right? So there's this thing, it's called compound interest. And is it like thundering outside? It must be thundering outside. I mean, we're not used to thunder in California, but I can hear some rumbling and stuff outside my window. But anyway, so look, man, there's this thing called compound interest. And there's a smart guy named Albert Einstein who said, this is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands compound interest earns it. He who doesn't pays it. And so what is compound interest? Well, I want to put it on something that we can kind of all understand. Let's say we got two cars. Right, we got two cars, and both are traveling in the same direction. Both are going the same speed. Let's say both are going 70 miles an hour, and they're side by side. All right, one car lets their foot off the gas for about 5 seconds, and now instead of them going 70 miles an hour, they're going 65 miles an hour. They realize that they took their foot off the gas, and so they put their foot back on the gas to go back 70 miles an hour. My question to you is, will they ever be able to catch the car that never took their foot off the gas and remained going 70 miles an hour. Would they ever catch that person?
Would they ever catch up just remaining at 70 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
What, read me the answer.
I want to say it again just in case everybody didn't catch it. We got two cars. Both are going 70 miles an hour. Both are going 70.
That.
One person takes their foot off the gas. Now they're going 65. See, Bobby says no.
Skirt.
Why wouldn't they ever catch up? Not going the same speed. Nope, they would never catch up. In order for that person to catch up, what do they got to do? They got to go 75 miles an hour.
They got to go faster.
Or faster. They got to go faster in order to catch that person who never took their foot off the gas. And so when we have things that are in the market, things that lose money, that's just like taking our foot off the gas. We got to put in more money just to break even, just to get back to the other person who never lost. You see what I'm saying? And so that's what a pure compounding interest account can do. That's the type of power that you leverage through a cash value life insurance policy, because they're not in the market, right? And so if we're talking about creating wealth, the most important piece to that is not necessarily money. It's time, uninterrupted time. So that way we never go backwards. We always go forward. Because let's be real, man. Most people don't have extra money to save. Most people just don't, right? So if we lose any, I know I've been places where I've had like $20 bill in my pocket, and I reached in my pocket, and I felt the money in there at one point, and then fast forward to maybe later in the same day, I reach back in the same pocket, and I don't feel the money there anymore. And I'm like, dang, what happened to my $20? It's like I lost it. Well, yeah, I lost it. I'm never gonna get that $20 back. It's gone. Somebody else got it now. Could I make another $20? Yeah, but I still lost the original $20. You see what I'm saying? And so that's why for our foundational pieces, for the things that matter the most, we need to lock up and secure our bag. And the way we secure our bag is through fixed accounts that are going to pay us a reasonable interest rate, 4 to 10%, no matter what. And that's how you come up. That's how we win.
Well, that's not fixed. But what you mean is like some things that are guaranteed to grow without relying on the market.
Right.
Right. And it all depends on the leverage that the life insurance companies create. And I don't really want to just get this all about life insurance per se, but what the mainstay that I really want to focus on today is just to make sure that you're minimizing the amount of fries that you're losing. You minimize the amount of times that you have to step off the gas in your wealth accumulation. And if 99 or 100% of your long-term savings are in the market, well, you have a pretty big ratio that's susceptible to losing fries. You have a lot of French fries liable to be lost. Right?
Yeah.
And I like to be specific with my language. Albert Einstein said compound interest is the ninth, eighth wonder of the world. And I think a lot of investing stock, Instagram profile gurus, whatever you call them, I like to quote that quotation, but I made a video where I think Albert Einstein was a little bit, he could have been more specific, because compound interest growth does not occur in the stock market.
It does not.
Let me say that again. Compound growth, pure compound growth, uninterrupted compound growth, what Einstein was talking about does not occur in the stock market. Why? Because there's never a company that just goes up nonstop. If you're following GameStop, you might think that will. If you're following Tesla, you might think that will. If you're following Bitcoin right now, you might think that will. It's going to go up, but you've seen it go down too. And the second it lets off the gas, you're losing French fries. And you can't catch up without putting more gas on.
Yep. And that's the piece. That is the piece. There's
Why not minimize that to begin with and stay ahead?
Yeah. Yeah, man, you know, I wish I could find it right now and pull it up, but you know, if you were to take one penny and double it every day for 30 days, you have over $1 million. If you don't pay tax.
Penny compounded. I got it.
Penny compounded. A penny doubled every day for 30 days, you'll have over $1 million. But if you have a penny and you double it every day, but you pay the tax on that penny, then you literally have I got to find a number. I don't want to say the wrong number, but it's literally like a couple hundred thousand.
30
you
days
know what that is?
5 million. I got it. 30 days is 5 million.
30 days is 5 million. So if you had a penny doubled every day, pure compounded interest. Okay, good. There we go. Look at that. A penny doubled every day. 5 million.
It'd be nice to get 100% gains every single day, wouldn't it? It'd be nice to get 100% gains every single day. That'd be awesome, right?
It would be.
If you know of a place to get 100% gains every day, let me know. We'll get you a radio show, right? But at the same time, what we can do is not 100% gains, but we can do 4 to 10% every single day for the rest of your life, tax-free.
Mm-hmm. Tax-free. Yeah. Now, I want to show y'all real quick. There's another there's some companies out there. Let me take this Starbucks straw out of my mouth. Shout out, Starbucks. We're going to share a little bit of something right here. Let's see what we got here. Where's my share my screen button at?
While you're pulling that up, I want to say something else about that. You mentioned time. And now you're up here on the FDIC. This is interesting. Is this with with regards to crashes?
This is in regards to banks and what banks do with their money. For those of you who don't know what the FDIC is, but go ahead and tap in.
Well, I'll try and link this into this. What I was going with the time piece, and maybe it'll be better to end on it, was that investments take time. In order for investments to be successful, they need time. If you put money into a stock or a bond or gold or an asset or anything, in order to make a return on it, you need time.
Yeah.
And time is the one thing that we don't know whether we have more of or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a variable that we can't control. And I like the FDIC, and I could even link it into this. I think a lot of people put money into the banks to be secure, but how much does the FDIC even secure if you have in the bank?
$250,000.
Only $250,000. So you're putting money in a bank, the most that you could get back from it is something, if shit hits the fan, would be $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
That being said,
yeah,
if you put money into the stock market and shit would hit the fan, stock market crashes, now you get less than what you put in. Or let's say you put money into the market and it doesn't crash, but you run out of time. How much do you get? Well, whatever the number is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, absolutely.
I think there's only certain places that you can put your money in, and when there's an emergency, you actually get 3, 10, 20 times more than what you put in there. And that only place is life insurance.
Only place. And so just to kind of share with you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, man. There's a little bit of lag.
My last point was it's the one place that helps you when you're growing and helps you when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the fail-safe and enhancer.
Right. And so I just put up the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and Ryan just basically kind of laid the framework, laid the groundwork, and talked about, you know, banks and their money. And, like, everybody uses a bank. Everybody puts money inside of the bank. Well, where do the banks get their money? Who insures them? Well, the FDIC, which is a government agency. So I just pulled up their website. All right, now anybody can do this. And I'm doing this to really just show you guys what kind of money most of us are leaving on the table. So I'm going to take a well-known bank. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for this. Bank of America. All right, so we're going to take a look at Bank of America here. And we're going to take a look at their assets and their liabilities. And we're going to generate their report. Bank of America, Charlotte, North Carolina. Shout out, Charlotte. Generate this report. Let's see what we got here. Okay. All right, so this is their actual report. This is their assets and their liabilities. All banks have these documents, especially if they're insured by the FDIC, which you do have to be insured by the FDIC in order to be a commercial bank, right? And so if we look at this column, these dollar amounts are going to be in thousands. So any number that you see in this column, you got to add three zeros to it. So take a look at the second line, total assets. Bank of America's total assets are $2.1
trillion.
Right? Yep. It says $2.1 billion, but you got to add three zeros. So $2.1 trillion of assets that Bank of America owns. All right. Now I want to scroll down a little bit. Hopefully everybody can see it and it's not like blurry. But we're going to scroll down the line 41. And I want you to see this line here, life insurance assets.
Life insurance assets. Why would a bank own life insurance?
Yeah, and why would a bank call life insurance an asset? Most people look at life insurance as a bill, as a liability. But here we have Bank of America with $2 trillion of assets, and they have life insurance assets listed on their balance sheet. Well,
how much life insurance do they have?
How much? Let's take a look.
No, wait. Make them guess. Hold on. No, go back.
Okay.
No, they didn't see it enough.
Okay, well,
life insurance assets.
Life insurance
assets. Holy Jesus. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I wish
wait
my cartoon eyes could go in and out right here.
Now, that's not $22 million, because remember, this is dollars amount in thousands. We got to add three zeros to this column. $22.7 billion in life insurance assets. All right? Now, it doesn't stop there, because this also lists the real estate they own. It also lists the common stock that they own. And so those of you who don't know what common stock is, it's going to be like your FANG stocks, your Apple, Google, just regular common stock shares. All right, so let's go take a look at that. Common stock, the stuff that everybody tells us that we should invest in. $3
billion. $3
billion. $3 billion. So they have $22.7 billion in life insurance assets, but only $3 billion in common stock. That's kind of, I don't know about you, but I'm not a genius, but I would wonder why they got, you know, eight times as much money in life insurance money than they do in actual stock.
That,
you know,
seems 100% flipped around from what everybody else is doing.
It does, doesn't it?
Everybody else has this. If they do come around to the life insurance conversation, they're asking, what's the least amount I can put into it? Because I like to buy term and invest the difference. I like to invest the difference. I put it all in the stock market, let it ride. 100% on red, right? That's
100%
crazy.
On red. Now check this out. Other real estate. They barely have any real estate. $227 million in real estate that they own. Check that out. $22.7 billion in life insurance assets. $3 billion in common stock. $227 million in real estate. Somebody hit the nail on the head. BOLI. B-O-L-I. Bank-owned life insurance. That's exactly what it is.
Brandon, I want to show. Maybe we got about 10 minutes left here on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, welcome to go a little bit longer. This is a jamming one. That is deep. So FDIC, you can go on there and take a look yourself, guys. If you're just listening on the radio, we just showed it live on Instagram. At All Heroes Don't Wear Capes. So let's say people decide to go forward with this, and they want to take a look into. Well, what are the possibilities if I try and maximize my net worth through life insurance like the banks are already doing? And I wanted to share a case study that is really near and dear to my heart. So now that we can do Zoom, I can even pull up the illustration and show everybody how it works.
Yes, please do.
This is a case that – It's pretty special to me. So ultimately, you meet older people and they're like, well, I'm kind of late in life and I want to take advantage of these things you're talking about, tax-free and growing wealth, but my health is not great. So, you know, what if the life insurance route won't work for me? But I still want to create that generational wealth. I still want to create something that's consistent and growing. Well, they can get creative, right? And so there was a couple, older couple. Dad was about 50 years old, and mom was a little bit younger. And that was a situation. He was not really insurable because he just didn't have the best health.
And that's kind of unfortunate. People wait too long to discover these things, and then they try to go for it when it's much easier to do when you're younger, right? So anyways, what ended up happening was he was able to get a policy on his daughter. His daughter is 23 years old. So stick with me on the math here. The dad basically was going to put in $20,000 a year, a little over, like $1,500 a month, right? Do that math for me. But he needed to catch up, right? He needed to step on the gas a little bit more. He was later in life.
Right.
But now keep in mind that this policy was on his daughter, right? So it's getting compounded growth without the drag of a 55-year-old, but instead of a 23-year-old female. He puts in $20,000 for 20 years. How much is that? How much did he put in?
$400,000.
$400,000, exactly. So he put in $400,000 into this policy. Let's find out how much it costs, okay? Here's an actual breakdown of the policy that we did on Jill. This was inherited to me from my old mentor, because now we're in, as you'll find out, the third generation of this policy. So let me just take a look at what you're looking at. The first year is policy year, and then this started at age 23. The net premium, I'm reading column by column, net premium is $20,000 a year. And then if you go all the way to the right at net cash value, that's how much cash value is available to them in that year. Called Jill home too early, the owner of the policy would get that death benefit. So notice in year one, his dad's put in $20,000, and if, God forbid, something were to happen to his daughter in that first year, he'd get paid back $1.3 million. If Jill ran out of time in that first year, he would have gotten back, I can't even calculate that percent return. But let's not go there. Let's not get bleak. Let me show you the bright side of this, right? So after 20 years, you can see through the net premium, he's paid in $400,000 and not a cent more. Not a cent more after that. But at this point, dad is 72. Dad is age 70. So he's about retirement age. He needs a little retirement income. He decides to take a loan from the policy to the tune of $28,500 up until the age 85 for 15 years, okay? So if you did that, 28,500 times 5 is actually 427,500. So he actually got back an additional $27,500 plus every cent that he's put in this policy, 100% tax-free. Right? So far, Brandon, how much does this policy cost? He put in 400,000 and he pulled out 427 and some change. How much did it cost him?
It's paying him.
But that's not all, because here's the thing. Jill, who was 23 when this started, is now 57. Is that right? Yep, 57, age 57. She's not ready for retirement income, so the policy gets to just sit and recuperate on that guaranteed compound interest that we talked about until she's age 70. Brandon, take a look at what happened then. She was able to take out $150,000 every single year for 20 years. She took out $150,000 for 20 years, tax-free. You do that math, comes out to $3
million. $3
million. $150,000 times 20 years, daughter gets paid $3 million. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So far, how much did this policy cost?
It didn't cost anything. It made money.
It made money. Brandon, it's not over yet, because this is what I'm doing. I'm dealing with now Jill's daughter, okay? Because when Jill passed away, if you look at the death benefit, what's that number on the bottom right there? Can you guys see that? When Jill passed away, she still passed on a measly $2.3 million onto her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So this policy was started off by a dad who had the fourth the foresight to see ahead and to trust in these plans and take a look at how they work, how they've been working for the past century. And keep in mind, this is just whole life. This isn't even indexed universal life. This is whole life.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He puts in $400,000 and it pays out $5 million over three generations, 100% tax-free. How much did it cost?
Time. That was
right?
It.
Let me say this. What kind of return in the stock market would you need consistently to make $400,000 into $5 million tax-free, right? And tax-free, it would probably be like more like $8 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much higher risk of volatility, much higher risk of losing French fries. So, guys, as we kind of draw up a close here to Money Talk, no matter what you do in your financial – there it is – in our financial planning, I hope whatever you're doing, minimize the amount of times you lose French fries. Minimize the times that you are letting off the gas. Let's stay on the gas. Let's get this bread this year. Let's solicit the business.
Let's get it, man. Y'all already know what time it is. We just barely scratching the surface. Thank you all for joining us here on the live. You know, we're probably gonna go off the air in 2 minutes, but we'll open it up for questions on both platforms so that you guys can kind of have us to yourselves for a minute. But if you are listening to us on NSF Radio, thank you for listening. You can catch us again here Thursday at the same time, 6 p.m.
Pacific.
9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.